AM Columbus, W224 EG Madison, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis, mourning the death of Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. The longtime lawmaker spent decades in office fighting for various causes, including those protesting the war in Gaza on college campuses earlier this year. Here's the late Congresswoman previously on the House floor.
Those who feel that they are not respected, who have come from the Mideast and believe that people do not respect them. Yes, you are. This is America. We believe in free speech.
Congresswoman Lee had recently been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. She was 74. Former President Trump holds his first rally since last weekend's assassination attempt, appearing with his newly announced running mate, J.D. Vance, later today in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Meantime, President Biden continues to face growing calls to drop out of the 2024 presidential race. Now sources tell ABC News Biden is now open to discussions over dropping out. This is ABC News. Chinese authorities say at least 11 people have died and 30 are missing in the partial collapse of a highway bridge in northwest China. Heavy storms and flooding appear to be the cause there, and in southwest China, dozens of houses were destroyed by storms. Evan Gerskovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter detained in Russia for months, was sentenced Friday to more than a decade and a half in a Russian penal colony.
Evan was on assignment when he was detained and accused of passing information to the CIA. He's the first American journalist arrested for spying in Russia since the Cold War. In a statement, the Wall Street Journal saying Evan has spent 478 days in prison, wrongfully detained, away from his family and friends, prevented from reporting, all for doing his job as a journalist.
ABC's James Longman. The U.S. is still trying to broker Gerskovich's release. Federal judge has delayed Louisiana's new law requiring the Ten Commandments be posted in all public school classrooms until at least November, while legal challenges play out. I'm Derek Dennis, ABC News.
Are you and your family weather ready?
I'm Terry Barr. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You may have heard the word derecho as a part of the weather lately, but what do you know about it? Derecho is a Spanish word meaning direct or straight ahead. It's why you may hear straight line winds blamed for damage from a derecho. A downburst, which is an area of strong, damaging winds, causes a derecho, and the Weather Service does not issue warnings for these. They're just standard severe thunderstorm warnings. So this means you'll want to be weather ready during any severe storm. If you're outside, camping, hiking, boating, find a shelter. Otherwise, lie flat, face down, on low ground. Most derechos happen in July, and Wisconsin typically has one or two per year. But experts say climate change will only help increase these numbers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Hundreds of people on death row have now been exonerated over the last 50 years, and many more have been executed, even though they're innocent. Here's Will Waukee.
It's being called a historic milestone. 200 people have been exonerated after being sentenced to death since 1973. The exonerees were wrongfully convicted because of misconduct from government officials or other factors, and then set free after being behind bars, sometimes for decades. Robin Marr with the Death Penalty Information Center says cases like this have been devastating, not just for individual families, but for the nation.
Communities really lose confidence in the integrity of the legal system and its ability to respond appropriately and keep them safe.
Half of the public now believes the U.S. unfairly applies the death penalty, according to the latest polling, but a majority of Americans still favor death sentences for those convicted of murder. Nationwide, Marr says far more than 200 people have likely been wrongfully convicted and sentenced to death, in part because of challenges with the legal appeal process.
Once someone is convicted and sent to prison, that burden then shifts to them to prove that they're innocent. And that's very difficult to do without a good lawyer. And it's also very difficult to do because of the operation of the law.
The Death Penalty Information Center says two-thirds of those exonerated have been people of color. President Joe Biden campaigned on abolishing the federal death penalty, but his administration has taken few steps to do so. I'm Will Waukee, West Virginia News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with a high near 80. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. And partly sunny with low 80s on Sunday. Slight chance of an afternoon storm. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Slight chance of a storm Monday with a high near 81.
Right now, it's 61 degrees.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey everybody, join us next time as we'll catch you up on news of the weekend and also the current status of the Democratic nominee Joe Biden. Not going to want to miss it. Be there.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
This is Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
It is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Thursday night, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. How you doing, my friend? You shot under. I'm going to announce right away. Johnny was golfing today, under 100, but the temperature while you were golfing, Johnny, 106?
I mean, it gets getting up there. By the time I was done, it was in the high 90s, just breaking those triple digits. But, yeah, I did. I kept my score just under that, though. So, you know, not my best day, but it's always fun to get out with the fellas and you know, and crush the balls out there, and then get back to business because there is so much going on. It's also fun to have Civic Media on the Bluetooth speaker app out on the course. You know, Busted Pencils, though, we're proud to be sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company. Those folks are big-time advocates for public education and are always making, you know, beer and hard work. They're putting hard work into building community and making that great beer. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. But speaking of, you know, lots of progressive things and having people on at Civic Media to listen to and to bring us all the information, a massive amount of information. I mean, you can't write this stuff, American politics right now. And then we have the Republican National Convention, as many of you listeners know, in Milwaukee, really close to the studio. So we have Jess in the studio. And today, as a guest with us, right, we have, Tim, why don't you introduce our first segment guest?
Hey, we got Todd Albaugh from Civic Media on site. Todd, what's happening down in Milwaukee, our friend?
Well, I miss you guys. Last time I saw you was at Minocqua Brewing at the pub at the tap house there in Madison. So, you know, I miss not having any Minocqua beer here. There's plenty of beer in the Panther Arena, home of the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee men's women's basketball team and the Admirals hockey team. I have not seen any Minocqua beer here yet. So we missed that.
Got to get it there. All right, Todd. So you have been on location for the Republican National Convention now every day, you know, and in the next 2 to 3 minutes, tell us everything that's happened. No, just messing around.
Sure.
I mean, we're coming into day three. There's been a lot going on, and tonight's a really big night. You know, this is the night where the former president will actually accept the nomination. Thoughts about what you've seen, though, since you've been there in the last 3 days, and what do we need to be looking for tonight?
Well, I would say this, and people who listen to our regular show Noon to 2 on Civic Media know this, but for your listeners who might not, I was a Republican for about 30 years. I started literally as a kid volunteering, worked on various campaigns for different elected officials. I left the Republican Party in 2011, largely over witnessing firsthand voter suppression bills that later I saw actually work, unfortunately, against somebody that I knew. So I left in 2011. It no longer represents who I am and my beliefs in large part. And as a friend of mine, Trigvi Olson, now at the Lincoln Project and also a former Republican, said yesterday, This convention this week is the total capitulation of the former Republican Party that was founded just up the road in Ripon, Wisconsin, to now the mega Trump Party, which has taken over this convention. That said, I'll tell you, I've never been to a national convention, been to a lot of state conventions, never to a national one. It feels very, quote unquote, normal in that not the platform, not some of the words or a lot of the rhetoric, but just, you know, there's booze and there's food and there's people dressed up in elephant pants and you know, all the goofy stuff that happened at a convention. That part seems pretty normal. Lots of media here from all around the world. You know, it's kind of a buzz, excitement. After the assassination attempt on former President Trump on Saturday, I will tell you that has done nothing but solidify the unity of the people here and the delegates. Maybe not representing all Republicans across the country, but at least for these hardcore delegates, they are locked, they are in sync, they are behind the Trump and now Vance ticket. In terms of the rhetoric, what J.D. Vance said last night and some of the things in the platform, this is a very different party. There were placards on the floor last night on the convention that said, deportations now, mass deportations now. And this is a party that has wrapped itself now into a theology. I mean, it's surreal. It's Orwellian. You have, you know, kind of these Christian band praise singers out on the corner and people waving their hands in religious types of overtones, shirts that say, I support Trump and Jesus. And they have now nominated a 40-time convicted felon, a guy who is found liable of sexual assault, i.e. rape in legal terms, anything but a walking, talking Christian. And to top it off, guys, tonight, Franklin Graham, the son of the former televangelist, great Christian Billy Graham, going to be here. His son, Franklin, is going to literally and figuratively anoint Donald Trump. And on the same stage introducing Trump, Dana White of the UFC Fight Club Federation. I mean, it is Orwellian. It is surreal here in Milwaukee.
Jeez, Todd, you're describing something that would almost sound like the WWE was putting together for WrestleMania, the way we put that out there.
And Hulk, I didn't even get to, Hulk Hogan's going to be here tonight. Of course, in 2007, there was a little dust-up because he got caught on a camera using the N-word. And, you know, as it turns out, black people didn't really take kindly to that. And, again, but no big deal. He can still introduce Trump here at the Republican National Convention.
Well, okay, so Todd, it is not your Republican Party that you were a part of, for sure. What, though, I mean, and I, what I've seen then, and for you to be there on the ground witnessing this, you confirmed what comes across, too, is there is a unity there that is really coming across. You say, you know, don't agree with it. It seems, you know, crazy in some ways. It seems off-kiltered. It doesn't seem to make any type of sense. Mm-hmm. But that message then, too, you're confirming there is a real sense of going like, we got this.
Oh, absolutely. Not only do they believe they've got it, they expect to win. And I think it sets up, in all seriousness, some danger here. And my friend and, you know, sometimes co-host Trivia Olson, the Lincoln Project, he worked on presidential campaigns for John McCain, for Mitt Romney, and others before he left the Republican Party during the Trump era. And, you know, what he has said is, again, it's just a capitulation of the Republican Party to Donald Trump. But these things are just not normal. This is not the old Republican Party of certainly not Eisenhower or Reagan or even Tommy Thompson or even George W. Bush. This is, I mean, Dick Cheney. Think of this, guys. Dick Cheney is not here. George W. Bush is not here. Paul Ryan is not here. My God, Mike Pence, the former vice president of Trump, is not here. You want to know why? Because this guy, Trump, and J.D. Vance is a bridge too far for even them to put that into context. This is how off the rails this party has gone.
Think about that, too, when you say, you know, Dick Cheney, and I remember those two during the Bush years. You like, that was the epitome of evil in a sense was
for some,
know,
yes.
Yeah, right. You know, right. And the fact now that you're going like, sorry, you know, Dick Cheney feels this is too extreme for him.
He has denounced Donald Trump.
Exactly.
I mean, absolutely. Not just saying he wasn't going to vote for him, denounced him. Paul Ryan one of Wisconsin's Republican favorite sons, former Speaker of the House and Congressman, has said that Donald Trump does not have the character to be president of the United States, and he's denounced him. So, and in terms of something I think that you guys, or I know you guys, are near and dear to you, you know, my maternal grandmother was the first woman to serve as a dean of University of Wisconsin School at UW-Richland. My parents are educators. My mom, my dad, my stepmom, my sister and brother-in-law, all, I come from a family of educators. I'm the only goofball that didn't go into education. Let me give you the time here, the amount of time in this show that public education has been talked about at the Republican National Convention here in Milwaukee. That should about do it. It has not been talked about at all. There's been no mention of it. There's been, if anything, you get kind of, you know, glib things being said here and there that we have to, you know, make sure that we're standing up for religious values and teaching our kids, putting the Ten Commandments and the Bible, you know, into classrooms. You guys know better than anybody that is not the intent of public education, and public education in Wisconsin, of course, are our communities.
Todd, the way you say that, though, too, it's really not surprising because, you know, erasing public education is the platform that I see of this current Republican Party. And so, you know, in a sense, what you're saying, talking about prayer, talking about Bibles, talking about all those things, that is kind of a way of saying, hey, public education, we've got you on the ropes from our side. We're looking to take you out 100% here, Project 2025. Todd, so you want to jump in there?
No, I was going to say, I think you nailed it. And I think this is really important. This is why Busted Pencils is such an important program, is because, and again, I like to say this, Trigby likes to say this, Democrats are great at building policy. Republicans are great at building narrative. And the narrative that has been put out there is that, hey, those are your tax dollars that are going to public schools because your kid gets appropriated X amount of dollars. Those are your tax dollars, and you should be able to take them anywhere you want. If you want to take them to a private school or religious school, that is your right. And what people don't, of course, understand is the special needs kids that public schools have to take and should take, and that costs money. They don't understand if you have a classroom in an AP course in a rural school district, that if you have 8 kids in that class or 25 kids, you still have to have an educator with benefits. And if you have 10 kids, like at the Kickapoo School District in southwest Wisconsin, they just had a meeting about this, you take 10 kids out, that's $150,000, $200,000 out of your annual budget.
Todd Albaugh, man, dropping some public education wisdom on us, Johnny Lupinacci. Todd, oh, yeah. So you got one more night there, Todd. Johnny, jump in.
Well, no, I just love it. I love the update from the front line. Yeah. Love listening to the coverage all this week, Todd, and enjoy the last day. I know it's a little weird to say enjoy the Republican National Convention, but what an important role and duty you're doing to bring us that information from the front lines, and just appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Well, appreciate what you guys are doing, too. It's a great program, and we got to keep fighting for public education.
Yeah, we do. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Todd Albaugh on the ground right there, RNC, Milwaukee. Todd, have a great night. When we come back, too, we talked about really special guests coming up. Yeah, the American Federation of Teachers. Randy Weingarten will be joining us when we come back. Busted Pencils, tune in. See you in a minute.
You're listening to Mad Radio WMDX, Madison's home for the Todd Albaugh Show.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's east side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Wolf for the big game. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyWolfLounge.com.
Gordy here from the Mad Radio Morning Show. When you text us at Civic Media, our text line is sponsored by Rocket Industrial in Madison, chosen by 80% of Fortune 500 manufacturers in the United States that want to package with less. RocketIndustrial.com.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 11 till noon on the talk you can't ignore. Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX and on the Civic Media app.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
There it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Republican National Convention, yes, it's happening in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee. And Civic Media is all over it, Johnny Lupinacci, all over it. We are, though, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, talking about education. Great guest tonight. She's an esteemed author and educator whose work critically examines the lingering effects of eugenics in the modern educational systems. Her book, An Illusion of Equity, The Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education, offers a powerful exploration of how historical injustices continue to shape contemporary educational practices. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Wendy Warren. How are you, Wendy?
I am well. Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. And thank you so much for this show, Tim and Johnny, Johnny and Tim. The voices of teachers are so often left out of conversations about education, something I find downright insulting, not to mention that it creates a vacuum where there could instead be critical contributions. So thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you. And I got to tell you, thank you for reaching out and, in fact, saying, hey, I'm doing some important work because there are so many people like you. But the idea, too, because that's how you're on the show. You heard us. You reached out and we're like, OK, let's set up a little conversation. And we're like, wait a minute. You got to be on the show, Wendy Warren.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. So, you know, the book here, you've been putting this down. That word, before we get into some of the questions that I prepared and sent to you, I know that that somehow can sometimes be seen as inappropriate in today's context. just making fun of what happened with President.
Right.
You know, but eugenics. How do people approach that word when you have that in your book? Is that a word where people go, "Wait, that word's too strong. We don't do that anymore." I mean, just tell me the choice of. I know where it's going and how you're working with it, but I mean, tell me some of the reactions to using eugenics. The word in a title.
I think people are surprised, just like I was surprised when I learned about eugenics way too late. And I'll talk about that a little bit more, but I'm just amazed how late I learned about it. It's a hidden story in our country. And because it's a hidden story, I think we can't see the threads of it that still remain or maybe how it echoes in current practice and policy. So when I started touching on that in the research that I did about large-scale standardized testing, I was appalled.
I know. And see, that's it. Because you look at it and you're like, wait a minute. So just so you know, quick, eugenics, this is a, I don't even want to say it's a debunked science because it was never a science. It's a debunked racist attack that's tried to say that certain characteristics and intelligences are measurable in these really weird way. And people are like, I think I remember hearing about eugenics with Nazis and Hitler. Yes, that's where you heard it. In fact, that kind of science of, you know, the great Aryan race was supposedly provable through a science, and that was eugenics. And now, though, I've also had people going, and wait, standardized testing. You mean like the Iowa test I took in so-and-so? You're saying there's racism in that test? Wendy, the answer is?
Well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Yeah, I mean, starting with, I've been a teacher for 25 years, right, in K-12. And I started seeing test results that didn't fit what I saw in the classroom. And so when I moved to teacher education, I saw the same thing at the college level. And I was so disturbed by this mismatch between what I saw, the test scores, and what I lived with students every day, that I had to find out what was going on. And so I dug into why large-scale tests were developed, and I was shocked at what I found, because through all my levels of education, no one had ever highlighted the fact that there had been a strong eugenics movement in the U.S. at the same time the ideology, as you said, grew in Nazi Germany. And nor did they mention that large-scale testing model was created by eugenicists for eugenic purposes, that is to prove that the white, wealthy Christian men who were in power deserved to be in power because they were the most intelligent. So testing was developed as a way to justify and reinforce a social hierarchy based on the idea that these groups were superior to all others. Leaders hoped that proving this, right, would prevent dissent and also justify practices that reserved resources for those that the tests deemed most worthy.
Mm. Johnny Lupinacci, you think about this, and I can hear Wendy in this. Yeah, today's high-stakes standardized testing, what is its purpose? If people are like, well, it sorts ranks and moves people in and out on a continuum, and it still does this along ways that we can trace back and say that eugenicists influence, and influence isn't even the right way, the eugenicist development of large-scale standardized tests, it's still sorting people out based on a debunked racist approach into how we do this. And so the effects are not just historical, the effects are current. And Johnny, I know you've seen this happen lots of different places.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I love this. I love that Wendy's on the show today. Thank you, Wendy, for doing this work, for this research, for bringing this to Busted Pencils, but to teachers and people who are interested in, you know, education, especially in policies. And, you know, like for listeners out there, Wendy's book is great. It explains the historical connection that she's making here between, you know, eugenicist logics and test-based policies, and these especially high-stakes test-based. So Wendy put it really succinctly for you, but you think like, wow, that's a pretty strong, you know, that's a pretty strong statement to make. Well, you know, get into the book, listener, get the book, An Illusion of, you know, of Equality. It's a great read because it takes you into that research that Wendy said, you know, I learned about eugenics way too late. And then I learned about these connections in a way that, Wendy, thank you for doing your civic duty and being an educator for all of us to make that argument strong, because as we teach that, you know, add that to the repertoire of critiques of high-stake tests, you know, this is a really strong and I think really sound information base to have a strong opinion about high-stakes tests. So I love, you know, you're essentially, you know, critically examining social hierarchies and how they continue to exist in our policies. Can you share for our listeners a couple of the examples, you know, because we're familiar with it, Tim, Johnny, and some of our callers, like we're familiar with, oh, high-stakes testing. And it also is pretty much, you know, not even a relic, but an institution of racism still alive and well. But can you give some specific examples for our listener of how this plays out in schools?
Yeah. So first I'll back up just a little bit more, but I will also say it felt like a responsibility to write this book for the very reasons that you said. So this statistical model that was used to create test scores was developed so that data on intelligence could be easily collected and reported, with the goal of promoting both eugenics and testing as sciences, right? So that allowed the model to be viewed as objective, and they hoped that that is the way that scores would be considered true. So even though most people's views about eugenics have changed over time, largely in the aftermath of the Holocaust, that view of the truth that could be revealed by test scores has remained much the same, and so does the demographically divided hierarchy that the scores create. So
Wendy Warren, hold on, Wendy, I just got to get you because we're going into break here. Wendy Warren is our guest, An Illusion of Equity, the Legacy of Eugenics in Today's Education. We're breaking it down, Wendy. We're going to come right back when we get back more on her book.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News. I'm Derek Dennis, mourning the death of Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. The longtime lawmaker spent decades in office fighting for various causes, including those protesting the war in Gaza on college campuses earlier this year. Here's the late Congresswoman previously on the House floor.
Those who feel that they are not respected, who have come from the Mideast and believe that people do not respect them. Yes, you are. This is America. We believe in free speech.
Congresswoman Lee. Congresswoman Lee had recently been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. She was 74. Former President Trump holds his first rally since last weekend's assassination attempt, appearing with his family, or appearing with his newly announced running mate, J.D. Vance, later today in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Meantime, President Biden continues to face growing calls to drop out of the 2024 presidential race. Now sources tell ABC News Biden is now open to discussions over dropping out. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A Bucks player has surgery. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks' Andre Jackson recovering from surgery on his left hand. He suffered a fracture in his left ring finger last week in a game. Should be all right by the time the team plays game one of the season. The Bucks now 0-4 after losing to Phoenix yesterday 115-90. Up next, they play the Wizards this afternoon in Las Vegas. Baseball resumes tonight for the Brewers in Minnesota against the Twins. NFL, the Packers have released former backup quarterback Alex Magoo. The team had asked Magoo about switching from quarterback to wide receiver, but released him anyway. Former Packers wide receiver Donald Driver at Racine Case High School, where over 500 kids showed up for his football camp.
So a lot of these kids, this would be their first time running. This is the first time trying to just learn how to run and jump. And so if we can teach them to change the direction, we give it to them early. It's funny because we were just talking about when I retired, and they was like, oh, I was just born.
That's Donald Driver with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny with a high near 80. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. And partly sunny with low 80s on Sunday. Slight chance of an afternoon storm. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Slight chance of a storm Monday with a high near 81.
Right now, it's 61 degrees.
Lake Ridge Bank presents Atwood Fest on Madison's East Side. Enjoy live music on three stages from local, national, and international artists, with plenty of food and craft vendors along Atwood Avenue, from Tex Tubs to Monty's Blue Plate. And bring the kiddos for Kids Fest, but don't bring the puppers. Leave your pets at home. Three stages, 30 bands over 2 days on Madison's East Side. It's time for Atwood Fest, Saturday and Sunday, July 27th and 28th. For a full music schedule, log on atwoodfest.com.
Grandpa's Barbecue Sauce. For decades, it's been a family secret. And if you weren't a blood relative, well, you never got a taste. Until now. Barbecue season is here. Get the rich, original Grandpa's Barbecue. It's a classic. Reliable. Just like Grandpa. Apparently, some family secrets are meant to be shared. Buy yours online at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Few Wisconsin events bring 600,000 people together from 80 different countries, but it happens every summer in Oshkosh.
Oshkosh has become synonymous with the world of flight and with EAA.
Dick Napinski's worked with EAA Air Venture for more than 30 years and knows its history. Do you? Where did EAA start? Wausau, La Crosse, or Milwaukee? The answer coming up. The fly-in is spread across 1,600 acres with more than 10,000 airplanes. It brings a big boost to the economy, too.
It's $170 million of economic impact and more than $110 million of direct spending.
So where did EAA start? Milwaukee in 1953 called the Wisconsin Air Pageant with 21 planes. All moved to Oshkosh in 1970. A high-flying slice of Wisconsin. It's happening July 22nd to the 28th. I'm Terry Barr.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin will join us.
And we'll be talking to Terry Bell about the three things you need to know.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 until 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Jess, given the music, man, just wants my head to go banging up and down. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated Educators Talking Education. The number's 855-752-4842. Our guest, AFT's influential leader, Randy Weingarten. And Randy, you know, coming in there, you gave me, you know, AFT now is the branding, and because I had said the American Federation of Teachers. Give us an update why it's now the AFT as the new branding for this, because I think listeners would love to hear about this.
So we're going to have a couple of very big announcements next week. I'm also watching, you know, Mike Pompeo called me the most dangerous person in the world a few months ago. So I see that he's speaking at this point at the convention. So I'm just, you know, I'm waiting to see what smear he's going to do right now. More dangerous than Vladimir Putin. And this guy was the head of the CIA and the head and the Secretary of State. That's the kind of smears they do. But it hasn't hurt us as the AFT, because what's happened is in the last couple of years, I think our combination of fight back and fight for progress, because we do both. You got to fight back against the bad things, but you always have to have the focus on how you're going to make things better for people. And how you do this through the collective, through people working together, giving people agency to like fight for their own lives, and then trying to use politics to, you know, rewrite rules so working people have a better chance. So I think this kind of combination of that fight back and fight for progress, we've grown by leaps and bounds, and we are now the NEA is bigger than we are, but we're the second largest teacher union. We're the, I think we're the largest, you know, support group union. We are the second largest nurse union. We're the largest higher ed union. Hmm. And we represent a bunch of public employees as well. So the through line is that we represent people, mostly female, who make a difference in other people's lives. So that's why we said AFT, education, healthcare, public services.
I love that. What a powerful way. Randy, you spoke about the excitement about this sort of Dickens moment, you know, the best of times and the worst of times, and the role, the historical role unions play in bringing us together, not only to strengthen our labor conditions, but really to strengthen our community, to strengthen our democracy, right? They have been historically, like as much as Tim and I regularly argue for the importance of public education, the importance of labor unions in this country and really around the world. But what I care the most about is this country is it goes far beyond just the labor conditions. It is about families. It is about communities. It is about health and strength, and near and dear to my heart, right? As an AFT, a Detroit public school teacher, we were AFT, right? So when labor unions started to become
associations. And a great new contract, by the way.
Yes. Yes. So when the association started happening, this sort of white collar persona for teaching kind of took shape, but not with pay and not with labor conditions. Mm-hmm. You know, we needed a regular reminder, like teaching is blue collar. It's a different kind of blue collar work, but it is close to the factory floor in a different sense. And near and dear to that, I would say for the last 20 years have been nurses. And so to hear you talk about the AFT being the second largest union for nurses in this country, that's huge. Listeners, that's huge, folks, because teaching has long been a feminized form of labor. When I say that, it's like when the men talk down to it, mm-hmm. right? When we talk about speaking back to patriarchy and these things, you know, labor unions give strength to, let's not devalue this important work because it's feminized in our community. And that's its own problem, but let's lift it up and let's show its strength. And nurses and teachers have a long history of having different work conditions, but similar struggles. So this is exciting. And I get it. I pick up that vibe you're laying down, Randy, of it being the worst of times and the best of times, kind of Dickens moment you're talking about, because that's powerful. And that's also why folks like the guy speaking right now, keep his name kind of out of it, because, man, I don't want to give it any more attention than it's already going to get. But that's why it's threatening, right? Because that kind of organizing is in every way threatening to dictatorships, to tyranny,
Exactly, right.
And it is in support of family, community, and democracy and health. And the fact that those families look different and they are configured differently. This is the great thing about unions, man. I get excited about it. Obviously raised in Union City itself, Detroit. Randy, thanks for all this work you're doing, man. Woo.
Thank you, Tony.
Whoa. There it is, the bell. I barely got to take a break, but you know what that bell means? Every day here on Busted Pencils, we highlight democracy in action, and I can pretty much just hit replay on what we talked about. But I want to link tonight's democracy in action being the organizing work that Randy gets to do, but with every member of a union out there, especially AFT members, every union member out there, everyone working right in their community is doing democracy in action. It is part of our civic duty to be active in our community. And part of that civic responsibility is working. And part of the role of any government is that it should be a strong working environment for its people. And so tonight's core democratic value linked to the democracy in action is popular sovereignty. It's one value that we often forget about it, but it's a really important one. Popular sovereignty is the power of the government comes from the people, and the strength and the health of its people is connected to their labor and to the work they do in their communities. We can't have a strong community without good health care. We can't have good health care without great nurses. We can't have a strong democracy without great schools, and we can't have great schools without really great teachers. And really great teachers are struggling right now, not because they're not great teachers, but because their labor conditions are too often way too unworkable. And that's where unions come in, because unions make a big difference. AFT work, all union organizing out there, big ups, democracy in action tonight, popular sovereignty, and in general, strengthening our community. Randy Weingarten and all the AFT workers and all those laborers out there making this country strong and great in a different way than the rhetoric coming out of the Republican National Convention. That segues us a little bit. I know I just took some space, and I just want to pass it back to Randy, but I want to say, Randy, as we're thinking about coming out of this week of stories, right, and into hopefully more of that, let's see what the future holds. I like what you're saying. We don't just put our heads down and cry, right? We are hardworking folks of this country, and so what do we do? What are some of the things you see on the horizon as we're coming out of this week and headed into some of the exciting things that might be happening? Where do you see sort of labor finding a party and us coming together to see what we can do?
So I think we have to, you know, because the November election will be so consequential. And look, we all say all the time, every election is the most consequential we've seen. And frankly, they are, because they all kind of show, you know, because they're all contrasts. And, you know, but what happens is sometimes you cry wolf too much and people tune out. So now, when it probably is the most consequential, I would say certainly since the Civil War, and Lincoln's election before the Civil War, but I would actually argue it's the most consequential since, sorry, once a social studies teacher, always a social studies
That's
teacher.
That's right.
You know, since George Washington decided he was not a king. I think this combination between, you know, Project 2025 and what the Supreme Court has now done in terms of rewriting the Constitution to create immunity for a president where it never existed, I think that we are really at a tipping point about the democracy. And, you know, and so the next few months, in terms of Civitas, is really going to be a community conversation with the country about what kind of country you want. Mm-hmm. Do we want democracy or autocracy? Does this experiment, which is messy, that we've had, that gives regular folks a voice, and, you know, where we've had to fight for it over all these years. I mean, women's suffrage, the Civil War, slavery, Black emancipation, just making Juneteenth a holiday in the last 2 years. So I do still believe in what King said, which is the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice, but we have to bend it. We have to fight for it. So I think that on one level, the next few months are going to be about that contrast. And there's a big contrast between what the Biden-Harris administration has done and what they did the first 2 years, you know, before there was, you know, before they didn't have the House of Representatives, and what the Trump administration did beforehand. I think there's a big contrast, and the country's going to have to decide. And that's part of our work in terms of making the contrast clear and getting through the disinformation and the misinformation and all the bullying and all the smearing. But the second piece is we also still have to do our work. And that work is, you know, in our various different units, we are actually engaged in campaigns. In healthcare, we're engaged in a campaign that takes on private equity that has basically gobbled up hospitals and made profits over patients. And we're trying to reverse that and trying to actually deal with that through our pension systems and other things. More on that next week. We're taking on student debt. More on that next week. We're going to do even more than we've done before. We got a big announcement next week on that. In schooling, I'm really into experiential learning. And let's make sure instead of testing and high stakes testing be the fixation, let's actually do portfolios and projects. And as Biden and Harris have remade the economy, let's actually create pathways for kids starting in high school, maybe junior high school. So let them make the choice whether they want to go into college or career. So I think there's a whole bunch of things that we can do to show progress, to show possibility.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Our guest, Randy Weingarten, AFT leader. Number's 855-752-4842. In fact, we have a phone call. We're going to take it. L.A. Tom, what's happening, our friend?
Hey, guys. First off, Randy, love, love, love you. And I've loved you for years. And power
Thank
to
you.
Feminism. Me as a white gay male, I say power to feminism and everything that there is, because my mother was the one that actually bore me, and she is actually the one that I would not be here if it wasn't for her. So, you know, that's what a lot of men need to start thinking about is, you know what, they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a woman, and they need to start respecting women in that way. I just want to say that I want to remind everybody tonight when Jimmy Swaggart, oh, I'm sorry, Donald Trump gets up and does his little speech tonight, which I will not be watching. Please remember that anytime his lips are moving, he's lying. And please put something under your TV that says Project 2025,
yep.
Because we are not going to have unions. We are not going to have the Department of Education. We're not going to have the Department of anything. This is serious stuff. And if anyone hasn't watched The Handmaid's Tale, I really recommend that they watch it on Hulu, because this is scary, scary stuff. And we really, really need to wake up. And I just want to know, what is it that we can do to get those younger people, 18 years old, and, you know, those new voters really, really engaged? Is it going to take a new fresh candidate, or is there a way we can get these people motivated just by the fact, you know, of everything that's going on? And also, how do we get the message out? I almost feel like we should have either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris actually take a whiteboard up on the screen, like almost like a teacher does, and show this is what our policies are. This is what their policies are.
L.A. Tom, man, set up some beautiful questions for Randy when we come back after our break. 855-752-4842. It's Busted Pencils, AFT's Randy Weingarten with us. Give us a call.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is a 1,200-mile footpath started in the 1950s and now running through 30 Wisconsin counties. The Ice Age Trails PR director, Melissa Pyrick, says one group of hikers describes it best.
They started in St. Croix Falls, so they kind of did this North Woods, which is very rural and rustic. And they said they couldn't believe once you get down into the southern part of the state, especially Dane County, all of a sudden it turns into prairies and it's just beautiful.
The trail continues south to Janesville, then back to the northeast and up to Sturgeon Bay. It is also one of just 11 in the country designated as a National Scenic Trail. Learn more about it in your area at iceagetrail.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We're back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest, AFT's leader, Randy Weingarten, in the house. L.A. Tom, thanks for the phone call. Really appreciate it. Got a few more questions. Randy, you know, we wanted to touch on this, though, too. The Teamsters' appearance at the RNC. What do we make of that? Thoughts?
Right. So, look, you know, first off, unions are not monolithic, and Sean O'Brien has a right to, you know, ask anybody anything and push the way he feels he needs to push for his members. And the Teamsters have always, you know, they flirted with Reagan. So it's not a surprise to me. What I and others were surprised about initially, because President Biden was the one who saved Teamster pensions, was the flirtation from the beginning. And, you know, and should we all be more bipartisan? Yes. But, you know, if you can't be bipartisan with people who are trying to destroy you.
Yeah,
it's hard. And but I can see why, you know, President Trump or former President Trump, you know, wants to say that he represents working folk. Not that he does, but so I could see why he wanted it. And so we had raised eyebrows because we were like, why would Sean give it to him? You know, so I was one of those skeptics who was wondering why he was doing it. But this is what I have to give Sean. And I know that some of my labor colleagues and friends don't like when I say this. He gave it to the proxies of the Republican Party. Basically stood there and called them out. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't agree with him about Trump or Vance. I know Trump for a very long time because I'm a New Yorker. I don't agree with him about that. But what he said about, you know, the corporations and their greed, and after the supply chains were fixed, they then jacked up prices the way they did, and how bad that was. I give him a lot of credit for saying that to that audience because they would never hear it. And that goes back to what L.A. Tom said, you know, it's different right now than it used to be. The media environment is so fractionalized. And so it's not as if we have one set of facts anymore, which is stunning to me. But, you know, when he was on TV, or when you had some of them, some of the NBC, ABC, CBS, there was a sense of one set of facts. You could have different opinions, but one set of facts. Now, with this huge disinformation campaigns, you got to meet people where they are. And you have lots of, so the whiteboard could actually work for some folks, but we got to kind of take the teacher piece and meet people where they are. And then work through the pain and the trauma to the contrast.
And think about that too. Yeah, the teacher, you're bringing it to and recognize, you know, taking an a pre-assessment. Where is my neighbor? I've got neighbors all around me. I've got one neighbor over here who thinks, hey, you know, I heard some great things with the Teamsters. And then I've got another neighbor over here going, my goodness, they're trying to take away my public schools. And you say, how do we make these communications around to everybody? It's, well, we're a good teacher. We have to meet, a lot of times we have to meet people where they are and help them move in a direction, potentially, at least in a way that we can talk to each other, because that's such a horrible, horrible thing. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, that goes back to the pluralism piece, because what I would say, one of the things that I am so worried about, what Trump did in his first term and the darkness with which he's run this time, is the dehumanization. And that, and if you listen to Bannon and you listen to some of his acolytes, they make people into enemies of each other.
That's right.
If you have a disagreement on something, you're an enemy. There's chaos, there's fear. And that's how dehumanization then, and that fear is what is the starting point of autocracy. And so when you look at PragerU and their stuff, you look at this stuff, you look at the fear, that's the opposite of pluralism.
Johnny, go.
That contrast, I just want to highlight that contrast. Randy, you brought it up, and I think it's a really helpful point of action that we focus on that contrast in everyday ways, because what you're talking about is, and listener, I think if you heard what I heard, this is really helpful. That when discussing difference, if it's done so divisively and with fear and creating enemy and breaking connections.
Exactly.
And then it's undermining solidarity. And solidarity doesn't mean everybody agreeing. Solidarity Correct. Means solidarity across our differences. It means valuing those connections. It means talking to your neighbor. It means disagreeing, but having solidarity in values and things like democracy and shared work environments, in our communities being strong and our economy being strong. That's building solidarity across differences. Randy, I love that framework, contrast work. Keep up the great work, everyone in the AFT. I know we didn't get time to call her, but we have Mark from Prairie du Sac who called in to share. He was AFT. And remember, folks listening, right? There's a lot of work being done to make it hard, if not impossible, to be part of a union. You can't take out something like solidarity, and unions are a formal way of expressing and experiencing solidarity. So power to the unions. Keep organizing. Stay dangerous, Randy. Thank you for all your work.
Absolutely. Randy, and what we say too, thank you for busting pencils. And man, what a great show. Johnny busted pencils. Speaking of, right? Minocqua Brewing Company, our favorite brewery. Randy Weingarten says she wants to go there. Madison Tap Room. Next time you're in Madison, Randy,
totally.
You gotta go. Heck, you got to go.
Totally.
Minocqua Brewing. They make beer great again. Go ahead, Randy.
I'll be on the trail from Labor Day to Election Day.
Hey, all right.
Hey, nice.
We're going to find you, Randy.
Also, real quick, AFT National Conference dates?
Next week.
Awesome. Get over there. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. And truly, what a great show tonight. Our guest, Randy Weingarten, AFT's leader, speaking truly some truth, some justice, and really busting pencils. See y'all tomorrow night.
You're listening to Mad Radio, WMDX, Madison's home for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Crude and Dom.
Join the Devil's Advocates on Monday. We've got Congressman Mark Pocan. He'll tell us why he's advocating for Joe Biden to step down as the presidential candidate for the Dems.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 3 to 6.
Are your taste buds bored? Awaken those tired senses with a culinary treat at La Pollera Colombiana in Madison. La Pollera Colombiana's delicious, authentic cuisine is like taking a food journey through Colombia. There's a dance of flavors in every bite. Open Sunday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, 9 a.m. till midnight. La Pollera Colombiana, 3579 East Washington Avenue in Madison. Your taste buds will thank you. La Pollera Colombiana.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Mad Radio.
WMDX 1580 AM Columbus. W224 EG Madison.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.